Hello, everyone. I'm going to start with a little bit of audience participation, if that's okay. Can I ask everyone in the audience who's ever made a mistake in their working career to put their hand up? Yep. So just bear that in mind as we go through. A little bit about MerseyCare. MerseyCare is a mental health and learning disability, but also a physical health community services organisation. We have high secure services, one of three nationally who provide high secure services. So we provide the full spectrum of mental health services and also physical community health services for a small part in South Sefton. We also currently hold the management contract for Liverpool Community Health, and we will acquire that organisation on the 1st of April, which will take us to just around 8,000 employees, over 100 physical locations. So that's quite a challenge for us. So I'm really delighted today to talk to you about the journey that MerseyCare has been on and what really drove us to looking at a just culture within our organisation, some of the challenges that we face and some of the innovation and exciting changes that we've started to see in MerseyCare since we've made a commitment to a just culture. What is a just culture? I'm sure some of you will have heard what a just culture is. And really, the Professor Sydney Decker is the author of A Just Culture. And we're not proposing to steal Sydney's thunder. We're very fortunate with MerseyCare that Sydney has been joining us and sharing our journey as we implement that in MerseyCare. But fundamentally, what it actually looks at is systems and processes, when there's errors in patient safety. Often those are as a consequence of human behaviour. And what we're trying to focus on, it's not the who has done something, so it's not about finger pointing or blame seeking. It's trying to get to a place of understanding and look at what has actually happened in the context and the environment of which it happened in. We've also learnt in MerseyCare that when we try quality improvement initiatives, it's really great. You can go into a clinical environment, you do a quality initiative, and it works really well. But unless the culture is right, the team don't receive it as well. And actually, neither does that quality initiative sustain once that task force team are removed, if we don't concentrate on the human factors bit before we start the QI initiative. So we've really started to backstep in terms of some of our quality initiatives, looking at that team infrastructure and what makes a good team before we start impacting on our innovation. So in terms of just in learning culture and innovation, what we are aware of is, as I said before, the systems and processes that we have in our organisations, and let's be honest, we do have an awful lot of them, often are set up to get the results that they get. And when we look at things that happen in a clinical environment, what we find that if a clinician makes an error or a mistake, I'll use that language to begin with, then it's highly likely another clinician or a nurse, a doctor, whoever, will make the same in that context and that environment. And there are many opportunities when those things happen for us to learn. And often we miss those opportunities. In fact, we don't learn because we go into this investigation sort of process, whether it's 72-hour reviews, root cause analysis processes, or disciplinary investigations. And often the whole essence of learning is lost. So I think what Sydney talks about is a lot about hindsight bias. And if any of you have read his literature, what he tries to describe is when something doesn't go as planned or as expected, and I'm deliberately using that language now rather than something going wrong or making a mistake. So when you're, you know, delivering care, if something doesn't go as planned or as you expected it to go, often we look at that incident with a hindsight bias. We go in and say, well, I wouldn't have done that. Or if they followed this rule or process, that wouldn't have happened in that way. And we often look at it removed from the context or the environment, and that may be a clinical environment award of which that incident happened or where something didn't go as planned or as expected happened. We look at it in a removed sense, and it's very easy in that sense to go, well, I wouldn't have done it that way, or they shouldn't have done it that way. We also realise that we enter very quickly, or we did enter in MerseyCare very quickly, into quite legal jargon, you know, in terms of our RCA processes, our 72-hour review processes. We start getting quite legalistic, and particularly as well in our disciplinary and HR processes. And actually, staff were telling us that was quite threatening, intimidating, and actually that was a barrier for them delivering care. And actually, and also another good indicator in terms of where your organisation is at is your staff survey. Obviously, there's a whole range of questions there, but particularly focused in terms of patient safety is about staff feeling able to speak out and raise a concern and potentially learning from that to prevent other incidences happening. So about 2 years ago, we spoke to all our clinical colleagues. We did lots of mega conversations. We asked our colleagues what was their barriers to delivering perfect care, which is our ambition in MerseyCare. What was the biggest barrier for them, you know, improving patient safety and patient experience in their day-to-day jobs? And overwhelmingly, it came back that there was a fear. There was a fear and a thing that if they raised a concern or but they put the hand up and said it didn't go like I wanted it to go or as I planned it to go, or actually I made a really genuine mistake here, it just went wrong and I'm really sorry, that they wouldn't be heard. That they would be blamed and there'd be some finger pointing. And they also believed that our 72-hour review process, so as soon as an incident happens in the workplace, we do a very quick review. It never happened in 72 hours, I can tell you that. It didn't engage the right individuals. It always led to an RCA. That was staff's perception, although that wasn't factually correct. And that if it went to an RCA, it definitely went to a disciplinary investigation. Neither was that factually correct, but that was staff's reality. That's what they believed to be true. They also felt when something went wrong in our workplace that actually the support we felt we gave, you know, we've got fantastic staff support and health and wellbeing services, but actually that immediate incident after something had happened at work that maybe we didn't want it to go that way, staff didn't feel as supported as what we thought they did. So there was a lot of criticisms. So we believe that gave us the platform really to actually say, well, we do need something different. We do need to focus in a different way in MerseyCare. And we started to have those conversations looking at the literature of Sydney Decker and the evidence. We'd been using lots of literature and experience from Professor Michael West as well to actually say, what could it be that we start to commit to and do differently in the organisation? So you've heard from other speakers, and I don't need to really rehearse this in terms of the impact that culture has on the workforce. And actually, you know, the workforce are the people that are delivering care day in, day out, or they're enabling others to deliver care day in, day out. And if we don't care for them, we don't care for you, then you're not in the best possible place to care for others. And that is really heart and central of what we're trying to do. So in MerseyCare, as I said, we've got an ambition for perfect care, and that's not saying that everybody will get perfect care right or deliver that all of the time, but it's a bold ambition because we believe that the aspiration should be that if it was your loved one or somebody you care for, that we strive to deliver perfect care wherever we can and wherever possible. We made some very strong BHAGs, we call them, in MerseyCare, an American term, in terms of big, hairy, audacious goals, for those of you who want to know. And they were very clinically focused with clinical outcomes. We've made campaigns such as Zero Suicide and No Fall First. And the challenge was given to us from our staff side colleague, should we have zero blame? Should that be a big, hairy, audacious goal with a MerseyCare? We were absolutely sure that we wanted a non-punitive culture. We wanted an open and engagement and compassionate organisation. But actually, we also believed it wasn't about being blame-free. So zero blame was not the appropriate language to use either. And if I explain that, if I gave you an example of a member of staff, if a member of staff in any one of our organisations dragged a patient from the hair from one area of the ward to another area of a ward, would you say it's okay we didn't blame them for that act? Absolutely not. And that was the sort of the conversation we started to get ourselves into. So we started to believe that actually it was about being just and fair in those processes, and actually making sure that through those processes there was an accountability and responsibility factor, as well as a learning opportunity. But we didn't believe it was out about saying zero blame. We believed it was just and fair and should be appropriate. But we also said that when things don't go as planned or as expected, that staff should expect a compassionate response when things haven't gone to plan or as expected. So even when somebody has potentially done something not as you would like them to do it, they still deserve compassion in that response. So benefits of a just and learning culture, I don't propose to read them all out, but actually I think there was a real conversation, particularly with our staff side, about that expectation that staff aren't always on their A game. You know, things go on in life outside of work, and people say to us, you should leave all those issues on the doorstep and come in. But we're human, aren't we? We can't leave all what's going on at home or in life on the doorstep. There's got to be a reality that we do bring those troubles into the workplace. There's also got to be a real key factor that it's okay for your line manager to hear bad news, and your line manager must accept that part of the role of being a manager and a leader in the organisation is that people, their staff, will say to them things they potentially don't want to hear. And that is the role of a manager, and good organisations encourage us to share that news. And equally, from a patient perspective, if we can get every one of our staff really concentrating on how they deliver care and learning from when things don't go to plan or as expected, that helps us avert risk. It also helps us gather organisational learning to prevent things happening that have happened to other individuals. And actually, that's a far better place for patients to be and a far better place for staff to be. If any of you know Sydney's work and you do a bit of research, and there's lots of information on Google and YouTube, what he talks about when he looks about patient safety incidents or any incidents and errors, what he looks about is things that are very human factor based. So really about human behaviours, and that's really the consequences of our choices that we make when we're in that environment, in that decision, should be based on our skills and our expertise. But it also has a lot to do with how our environment is designed, the systems and processes that we put in play within an organisation. We've done so much now. If you think about years ago when drugs were similar colours or stored, you know, next to one another, probably inappropriately, which permitted, if you like, errors to be made, or more frequently errors to be made in relation to drugs. We've moved on a lot from that, but there's still lots of environmental factors that actually cause errors in the workplace, even the way wards, environments, clinical environments, observation desks, etc. are designed. He also talks about at-risk behaviour, and this is a behaviour that you might acknowledge individually. You know, there's no really right answer or wrong answer, and you're deciding what the decision is making, but you're doing that based on your skills and your experience and the fact of how long you've been in that role. And when things don't go as planned or expected, and they kind of fall over this side, what we're talking about is those individuals will need coaching, counselling, consoling, supported in the main when things happen in that area. And the reckless behaviour is the example I gave, which was when, you know, if a member of staff dragged a patient from one end of the ward to another, that was reckless, and no code of conduct, and no one in an organisation would say that sort of behaviour is acceptable. So there's quite a clear demarcation. It's not as simple as that when you're trying it in practice, but they're kind of the vehicle that we're using. So the sort of things that we've talked about is, we do believe that getting that culture right within that team, that clinical team, really lays the foundations for some really amazing innovation and some quality improvement initiatives. When they come in, when that team is strong and there's high levels of trust and there's high levels of autonomy, the quality improvement, the innovation lands better, sustains and goes forward to keep improving. In Mercycare this year, in our clinical quality accounts, we've made a commitment to actually delivering a just and learning culture. And we've actually picked on three objectives, or I should say our staff have chosen from their feedback what three objectives they wanted us to concentrate on this year. One was the 72-hour review process, and actually how we actually do that with colleagues and who we involve, how we engage and how we feed that back, that process, and also the language that we use on those forms. Because some staff fed back, if they were injured in the workplace because of an injury, that sometimes the 72-hour review trivialised their injury from their perspective. So we've been very careful of the language that we've used there. The other thing that we've been really quite powerful is sharing good practice stories. And that's such a simple thing, but we weren't doing it that well. So when things hadn't gone as we expected them to go, we weren't sharing that story. So we weren't sharing the experiences of when, what one team had a CQC inspection. One time it didn't go so very well, and the experience they felt and the strain that team went under and the emotional challenges that they faced from feeling that they were identified as a team in trouble. And therefore, they were troubled individuals, and therefore, they needed sorting out. That was their staff's perception. To our last CQC inspection, when a team was identified as requiring improvement, the experience that they felt they shared was very, very different. They felt supported, and we identified them as a team that needs support, not a team in trouble. And again, small changes in our language and our terminology, but had major different impact on that group of individuals. And obviously, the other thing we've concentrated on is working with our colleagues about asking for their feedback and really being open and transparent in that feedback. When there's been an incident in the workplace, did they feel supported through that incident? Did they feel supported and cared for by their managers and by the organisation? Simple changes we've made in that is previously staff fed back to us when an incident had taken place, all the suits came. And they felt when the suits came, they were going to be suspended. That was their perception. And what we learned from that is when incidents have taken place, particularly over the weekend or in the evening, there is a senior management presence, but they turn up, you know, really simple and casual attire, and they bring things like sandwiches and drinks with them. So staff feel supported to have a really open conversation. We've launched a microsite, trying to be as digitally enabled as we possibly can. Lots of the schemes that I talked about previously, we're using technology to enable that and to share the learning, gather that learning in, and actually enable that going through. So we have developed a microsite and actually asking for constant staff feedback. So far, we've done lots of things. We've actually done, you know, delivering against those three objectives. But actually, interestingly, this has spiraled out into every bit of work that we're touching on. So we've looked at developing a new staff support, supporting colleagues policy. That's been done with staff side and HR colleagues. We've also looked at early resolution processes. So we've looked at when staff are injured in work, and we had some claims going back years, you know. And staff were saying to us, well, you know, we don't feel very supported. You know, you've agreed that I've had this injury in the workplace, yet we're still in year two and nothing's happened and we've not settled it. So we've looked to how we can develop an early resolution process, and that's going really well. We've looked at our attendance management policy, again, removing punitive language, negative terminology, negative semantics. We've established a just and learning culture task force. We've recruited ambassadors from our clinical teams. In fact, they're out and about all this week having just and learning conversations. Eventually, we want every employee to be an ambassador, but we appreciate we take baby steps and it's bit by bit at the moment. And there's been a real focus, wasn't the intention to start out with, on our HR policies and procedures. And if I just give you one example of this is just culture in action. This is one of our clinical divisions, our secure division, and this is the number of disciplinary investigations 2 years ago to what we have now. And you can see an absolute downward trend in suspensions. And that's because at the beginning of the investigation, we ask what happened. We ask different questions. We don't focus on who And that has been a major, major change within the organisation. And, you know, to have disciplinary investigations that are under five in one division, it's got just under 2,000 staff. You know, when we normally had an average in the 30s, you know, going back 2 years ago, and we've sustained that level now. And actually, you know, staff side colleagues have been very vocal about how it feels different, that they really believe we're trying to get the learning when things don't go as planned as are expected, not trying to find out who did something and blame them for it. And I think one of the questions I'd ask you to go back into your organisations and ask is, out of the disciplinary investigations that you do, how many of them result in a case to answer? We found it was less than half. So therefore, we were putting an awful lot of people through an awful lot of things, and there was no case to begin with. If you could get rid of those as your starter, then that would be a really helpful place to be. So really positive there. The indicators, again, you as you would expect, in terms of absence rates, retention, our Datex reports, and actually we've seen some more reporting now, which is positive. We see that as positive because people feel able to report an EMS or actually report something because they know that blame culture is being removed and we can gather the learning and share that learning, which is really important to us. So lots of next steps for us. We're still continuing to recruit ambassadors across the trust. We're very fortunate that Sydney Decker is coming back to Merseycare for a whole week in January. He's spending some time and we're hoping to have a masterclass, which we can invite people to if people are interested with him on the Thursday, the week he's with us. So that's taking place in January, and that is going to help really gather our momentum to create our quality account objectives. So we really believe it's really important in those quality account objectives that we have a staff objective, because it's our staff that deliver the quality accounts, and we continue that engagement and move towards year two implementation. So thank you for listening, and happy to take any questions now or later. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda.